Okay, hey, good morning and aloha. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show right here on talk808.com. Thank you for joining me, and we're happy to be back. Took a little break and configuring things and trying to get them up and running. But meantime, the world didn't stop turning, and the politicians didn't stop churning. So that means we got lots and lots and lots to talk about. We have the TMT, the Mauna Kea telescope issue. It's really not an issue. The situation is that the chickens are coming home to roost, and that there's this thing that we've been lulled into describing the Hawaiian nation as a host culture, but we are not as cordial when it comes down to when the Hawaiian community want to exercise their rights and be observant of their sacred grounds or whatever it is. We then treat them as if they are an obstruction. And so I'm thinking back on prior governor Neil Abercrombie, the Mr. Aloha himself. I mean, I don't think he had anything other than Aloha shirts. He was Aloha. But as the game was played by Neil Abercrombie, he had a proclamation lifting and freezing all laws of zoning and environmental, and unlike David Ige, the governor, current governor, Abercrombie actually did it surreptitiously. He invoked or ordered a proclamation, signed it, and put it into effect without notifying the people, and even not even just notifying them, getting their input or anything. And it was a sad situation. That meant that all the rules and the zoning rules and all of those things were lifted and set aside. And that meant for anybody that had an intention of building, ignoring the laws, the environmental laws, just you name it. So it's strange that David Ige, in the addressing the TMT, have come along and decided to employ the same thing. So it reminds me of what I grew up in, the climate I grew up in. If you're a person of color, and I know that now in Abercrombie's position, he's a Anglo-Saxon, and with Mr. Ige, he's quote, a minority of sort, but in the way things are structured here, really not a minority, especially when you behave in a way that you declare a proclamation and then you begin to, it's an assault on the native people here. And I don't believe many people in state government, based on what I've observed in my 30 years of living here, really gives a damn about the native population. Now, they'll wear the Aloha shirts. They'll show up at the bowls wearing leis. They will endow themselves with, you can't see their eyes when it comes to give state of the state or some function because so many leis on them, they barely can stand up. I think they have to put a 2x4 in some of them back of their backs to help them stand up. But this, what we've recently witnessed now, and it's an insult, it's an assault, and what it says is that the native people, that's just not something we use in managing the concerns of the state and the native people. This host culture, as they describe it, is hosting a bunch of people that simply ignore the rules, ignore the rights. And I don't believe a guy like David Ige accepts the fact that this Hawaiian effort, and this is a nation of people. I don't believe that based on what I witness in his behavior, especially now. And I speak with authority on this because dealing with the various agencies that are housed under his authority, coming under his authority, Ige's authority, they're arrogant, unapproachable, condescending, and racist. And a little bit more if I care to waste your time. But Ige has demonstrated. Let's take, for example, and this is all related to, you might ask, well, how is it related to the TMT? You're going to talk about the TMT. Well, I'm going to talk about TMT, and I'm going to talk about the amount of money that has been expended or promised out or committed out to this effort to thwart or to address. I don't know what term to use because when you look to see that he has made, he being Ige, has made a proclamation invoking the use or authorizing the use of the National Guard. And yet nothing has happened other than the blocking of and people expressing themselves and saying, you know, look, hey, Governor and others, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. You have your foot on my neck, my culture. You're stepping on my culture. You don't respect it. You're giving it away for mere pennies. And then, and we're going to talk about, there got to be some trick to this whole thing. And I'm going to try to go beyond the storytelling and the limited time that TV and media has, regular media has on this, because they don't get the whole story and they're not going to ask all of these questions, because a lot of people, what I've witnessed, many of the people today, as I've described in others, today they're working for the state, but yesterday they were working for the news stations. So we have all those concerns. So the hard-hitting questions are, why did you even invoke or authorize a proclamation? Why? What is it that Native people asking, and why is it that it is clear, in my opinion, in my observations, and based on, and I, by the way, I have a law enforcement background, in federal and state, so we're not going to talk as if we don't know what we know, but we do know a little bit about it. It's been a while, but still, the Constitution and all those things dictate, the Constitution of and the civil rights of others dictate how you behave in a law enforcement capacity. That means the governor, anyone. So what brought him to the point of wanting to invoke and incorporate the National Guard? And when you look at the people, and then what prompted him, or what is it that triggered this need to lie, that and say that there's some drug use, some reported drug use upon the hill, and some illegal activities? So I have to ask this basic elementary, because I'm elementary. I don't pretend to be a Rhodes Scholar. I do know how to cross the road, though. But other than that, but all kidding aside, how does one come to terms with invoking the National Guards, and then telling them that they are basically criminals, but they haven't done anything? You then stand on TV and you say, there's been some crime. We witnessed some drugs, some smoking and drug, whatever, usage. And so there should have been an early announcement that we arrested several people for drug use or possession of drugs or something. If you describe it as illegal in your presentation to rebut or inform the public or the media, then I would expect drug use, compared to trespass, compared to obstruction and speaking out and protesting your civil rights, and you didn't have you didn't cart the people off as drug users as you witnessed it. So I say big lie. But also, it reminds me of all of the shootings of black men, the innocent being shot unarmed, or where it results in arrest or contact with police results in a death or injury to the citizen. So what happens? We go back. There's been a history of, well, he had a gun. I thought he had a gun. So that get you sitting at home, oh, these are bad people, so it's okay for you to take out the National Guards and bring, because these are dark people, these are people that you can't trust, so you should be able to go and get the National Guard and do what you need to do to suppress them. They all, you know, all these brown people, they act up. So, now, if you're offended by my remarks, then I would say, good for you. That's a healthy reaction. You should be, because if I stir some emotion in you, that means you might be inclined to ask further questions, more probative questions, rather than nodding your head and say, yeah, those guys are interfering with progress, and they are interfering with the future, and I have a right to see where I came from in the universe, and I have, yeah, you do, but don't do it on the shoulders and in the backs of a people who says that this is important to us. Mauna Kea is important. It's not for us to evaluate and decide whether it is or isn't, or they're lying or they're making it up. I mean, so when I go into a church, and I don't go to church, but in the old days, if I went and I felt like I wanted to go and pray, I would be terribly upset if I found that someone had come in and bulldozed and dismantled the pulpit and all of that, and says, you can't pray here today, you can't pray here tomorrow, because we're building a road through here with no concessions, no mitigation, no nothing, because you are the government. You're the little man with at your disposal, a government, an attorney general. I had to laugh the other day when I was thinking back. We look at Donald Trump and what he's doing, and we hawk and we bark about him. And I'm not suggesting that I support him or anything that he does, but I want you to hear that clear. But there are so many similarities between people like Abercrombie, Ige, heavy-handedness. And then having the need to lie and manufacture and fabricate a relationship or a situation that really isn't there. So I'm often asked, what do you think about the TMT? And do you think they're right and all? And let me just establish something. I don't believe that we, and I'm an African-American, a black man, I don't even believe that we are entitled to or should receive reparations, the 40 mules, 40 acres and a mule. That's my personal belief. Why, you might ask? Because if we're going to beg for that and say that we deserve that as a compensation for having been victimized and being slave and the results of slavery, if we're going to use that, then, and that's going to make us whole again and make us right, well, what about the native people that we as African Americans were used to suppress, that we basically use as an implement of the slave traders and all of those people who wanted to develop America and grow America, and they use us, and then we became part of their military and what have you. Do we really need or deserve, or should we wait until the native people are treated fairly? Because I think that if the shoe was on the other foot, I would be upset and hurt by the fact that, yes, you were enslaved and you came to our homelands and our native lands, but we are being hit and impacted by the same racist practices that you are, you African Americans. So I think that when someone asks if I, in fact, do have any opinion about Mount Akeel, and what's my opinion? Do I think it's right? Do I think they're faking it? I believe that in itself is a racist act, an expression of racism. You're behaving like a racist because, or ethnocentric. You have no right to look at something and say, what do you think? You think they're faking it? You think they're making this up? They're claiming they're using the mountain as a prayer, a site for prayer. Well, you're projecting on them that you're questioning their way of praying, their way of practicing their religion, all of those things. You're insinuating that something, or in suggesting that, or you're hinting that this might be something underhanded about this thing. They're really not using, you know. And so if you step back and step out of that situation and look around, and you'll say, well, gee, they're same parallels as I experience. Who is driving this? So you have the toss-up between the Canary Islands. You have this and that, and the sighting these telescopes. So why is it that David Ige is hell bent on and using the military, and I say the military, you call it the National Guard, but let me remind you, the National Guard gets deployed some 9 months out of a year or longer and go and actually fight in the war. So they're military, okay? And so this TMT, and I'm very happy to see what I'm seeing. And do I think it's right? Do I think it's wrong? Well, I'm not going to go there because it's not my place to look at other native people and evaluate or assess if they're right, if they're wrong, because I know Hawaiians, but what I know about them is so little that it could be said in a matter of minutes, because I don't know their historical background. I don't know their language. I don't know what they see, what they do when they go to pray. I don't know about the lady or the stepping off point into the great universe. I don't know that. So this is really a situation where it's wrong, but it's a wake-up call, I think. And what I was impressed with, and still is, the other day I'm coming home, there's lines of people waving the Hawaiian flag. Lines of people, aoli. Lines of people saying no more, enough. Now, Mr. Ige, it's an insult. You have the right. I mean, if you step back and say, well, you know, why did you do it? Okay, you don't even have to answer us why you did it. It's just, it's offensive. And it tells us now that you've been in the state Senate for some while, very quiet. Reminds me of the Wizard of Oz, the little guy behind the big curtain. And then look at what he was able to do. Just at the stroke of a pen, and at the advisement of others who clearly have racist intentions, because if the people are saying no, then you need to give healthy considerations. And it's a stat game. We won't call it a kangaroo court because we don't have kangaroos here. We have people that are rather jumpy try to play games with you, but let's look at it. You have a state agency that is responsible for the management of the natural resources, the historical, the archaeological, will be redundant and say the trees, the forest, the water, and all of those things, and the natural resources, flora and fauna. But that agency is as corrupt as hell. You get people that the governor gets to appoint, like Suzanne Case, and like the other gentleman who, I think he, I don't know if he worked for one of the United Ways or something. I'll think of it in a minute. But they all come in with special interests to accomplish and take away, steal from the native people. It's a legitimized process of theft. Whether it's water, the rights, denying and giving most of it to big business here in the state, and then going in and defending or removing it or not putting it on the agenda to be heard by the land board, who would at least present it and make an assessment. I don't know if it's a legitimate one, because it's my fear that an experience that every time a meeting is held in these state agencies, they already know what the hell they're going to vote on, what they're going to do. They already know that because of stacking the cards. Or you take, for example, the TMT. The DLNR is involved, and the state agency owns the land. And then in turn, the person gets a permit. Who issues a permit? Who makes the assessment? The DLNR. So, when someone objects to it, who is the responding party? The DLNR with their law enforcement. And then with their IRAD. And one big lie, and I'm just throwing all of this out, and if it makes sense to you, good for you, because I don't fully understand most of it. But just trying to connect the dots and being vocalizing it and being overt, and saying that when you have the IRAD, the sound device that you're going to, and one of the state people suggested that we're not going to use it as a weapon. We're going to use it to alert the public, really? Well, when did the DLNR ever be in any emergency and have the role of alerting people? Usually we hear sirens. So do you go to the Department of Land and Natural Resources website or call a special number when there's a tsunami? They could use that IRAD there, but have they ever had a cause? So there's several issues here. The Department of Land and Natural Resources goes out and buys, we're guessing, because you see, if you notice, you ask any of them a question, they'll talk like parrots, man. You think, damn, that's an African gray, just talking and singing, and I mean, you can't shut them up when they're spewing their BS that's favorable to them. But if you ask them a question, here's what they say. Well, I can't comment on that right now. But on the other hand, you take the TMT, you ask them, can you comment on the lawsuit that Mr. Nevis is making? We don't normally comment on active cases. Well, hell, it wasn't active just the other day. The other day you were spewing all kinds of nonsense. But today you've been a lawsuit. So now all of a sudden, so it's like whack-a-mole. You ask a question over here and they pop up over there with another explanation. Why is this so offensive? Because you have a situation where you have a native people who are saying that it's offensive, it's a violation of their rights, and our response is, get the army. We'll put them in their place. And that may be not a reenactment of the takeover or the overthrow, but it has the same nasty feeling, suggesting that if you don't agree with us, we'll play with you and make whole molly molly and be nice with you for a while, but at some point we're going to have to show you how big guns we have. So let me tell you what I've tried to structure and try to compose an idea of, give some kind of vague, and don't hold me to all the specifics. I'm dealing with an agency or people that always say, we can't talk about that right now, but then you'll have them just 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, you'll have them Dan Dennison with a little video and a little statement lying and presenting the statements and not getting back to you, but getting back to the people, running ahead of the parade, so to speak. So you want to know how offensive this is? Now, TMT people that are going to own the telescopes or going to manage them, when the last time have you heard that you go and rent or lease a piece of property and the landlord provides you with the law enforcement at your disposal to come and arrest anybody that come to your house that you don't want to be there? And the landlord takes the money and pays for the law enforcement to come. But better yet, the landlord has his own cops. And we're going to talk about some of the cops, and we'll call it who's watching the police, who's policing the police. You know, there's a term called ragtag and what have you. But what has happened with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, the very people that are, quote, supposedly leading this and spearheading this law enforcement effort on TMT. We have the HPD here, the Honolulu Police Department. We have several agencies involved. You got the HPD, the Hawaii Police Department over there. But through this effort, folks, and again, if we had an honest and open, respectable DOCARE, or DLNR, under Suzanne Case and under Mr. David Ige, we would be able to ask specific questions and get specific answers, answers that are pertinent or relevant, that clearly gives a better view. So I tried to reconstruct or try to figure out best as I could on the periphery now. So, but I want to give you an idea. And I don't know the language that well, not the Hawaiian language, but the lingo of union agreements and contracts and conditions of workplace conditions and salaries. So I'm going to tell you what I know, or what I've been told from three or four different sources. And then you go from there if you feel that it's important enough to reconstruct it or get better details. Have at it. God bless you. And please share with us if you are able to. But let's start off. Who are these people that are going to wear the guns with the badges and stand there and cry when they, because they're arresting their own kupuna or their own relatives? Who are these people? Well, they come from many walks of life. Former cops, some of them left the agency because they didn't like the agency. Some of them were threatened with given an opportunity to leave so they don't get fired or get charged, whatever. We don't know. But in an 8-hour work period, this is what's described, and I've been pounding the pavement trying to get specifics, but I guess I got enough that convinces me that there is something wrong in Denmark. Something stinks. So most of the officers, the bulk of the DOCARE officers, as I've asked a couple of people that were actually on site over there to give me an account, an approximate account of how many are there. And so maybe 35. But we know on the Big Island, these officers are working. They have a regular 8-hour workday. But this situation now changes that, and they are possibly working a 12-hour day. So if you're working more than 8 hours, you get time and a half for overtime. So if you're working 12, you do the math. But a person from Oahu who goes there, I'm told, and works for 8 hours, but then if he works overtime, he's going to get time and a half. But if he works more than 7 days, they decided, and again, I want to be cautioning you. What I'm telling you is that the exact science is, I don't have that because I wouldn't be able to get it, call the state up. They were going to say, well, we can't discuss that. You know, there's so many variables. So I'm telling you what I'm comfortable enough with saying. So we're informed that management said, well, if you're from Oahu, you get 24 hours. You get paid for 24 hours straight through. So what if you made $40 an hour, regular, and you get time and a half? So you figure that out. Half of that, again, could be from $17 to $20. But then if you stay over there, you get 24-hour pay. So you get $40 times 24, plus time and a half. So, in my estimation, and again, if you're out there listening, DLNR, you hear this later, don't bother to call me and tell me that I was wrong and I suggested the wrong things and I was inaccurate, because I would say to you, bring the papers and lay out each person, redact their name, each officer's name that is on site, and bring the papers. And don't tell me you can't talk about it because it's under investigation. You see, what they do, it's kind of silly if you can understand this. I have actually, take the health department. I go out and out of the goodness of some of the state, city, county workers or concerned citizen, they'll call and say, hey, there's a guy dumping oil in the water here, and he does it every day with 5-gallon barrels. And I go to the state and go, hey, do you have any information on this company? No, we don't have anything. But what do you have? Well, let me send you some pictures and you can look at it and get back to me and tell me, and I'll share with you and who the subject is and who the suspect is and what they're doing, and I'll give you the video. And then you don't hear from them, and you go back and you call them up and say, well, what's the status of that? Can you give me any information on that matter that I call you up? Well, you know, Mr. Cox, you know the policy. We can't comment on anything that's under investigation. Now, you heard me earlier say why I'm bothered by the way Ige and others are treating the native people, because I'm familiar with greater details, specific instances where they being various state agencies will lie to you. And so that you understand, I'm not a radical. I just believe in the American promise that people are free. We have a right to exercise our rights, freedom. We're not to be oppressed by the police force or the military or the government. So if you have a problem discerning what I am or what I do and why I do it, just trust that I don't get paid for what I do. And there are kids that are coming up and deserve and should be expecting to breathe clean air, clean water, drink clean water, and live on this earth with the same promise that we all have, a good, clean living. So don't bring in the politics and don't try to portray me or prescribe your views. I'm not a left winger, right winger. I'm not an environmentalist. I'm not an activist. I'm just a human being who understands the pain of being oppressed and the practice of being oppressed. The practice at the hands of others who will deny you the rights that they enjoy and that they exercise. So imagine through this, we have information that suggests that one DoCare officer in this process suggesting they can make $2,000 in one day for a 24-hour period. So if you have 8 and 9, 10 guys from this island, and remember now, if you're a supervisor, the salary goes up. So I tried to pick a Creole 4 or Creole 1. But again, if you're calling these people who are trying to hide from you, and it's always us and them. They supposed to work for us, Malama Ka'aina, you know. And if you get paid for it, it's like you don't expect you have to go and pick up the dentist's children if you from school every day because he performed a dental service on you, work on your mouth or whatever. Do it, dentist, you know. What you would do is you pay him and then your relationship is done. You're equal. You paid him for his service. Well, for some reason, the DLNR believe that we owe them something. They believe that take. And I have a word to all of you officers out there who say, I'm so hurt by this because these are my kupuna. These are my, well, damn it, it's okay to stand up sometime. It's okay to say, well, you know, we're not only doing that, but I'm making a loot. I'm making a killing while up here enforcing this BS. But instead, blood money. If you don't like the pain, get out of the game. But don't expect to go, and what I've been hearing from a number of people that I've been speaking with that are participating in protesting, they're moved by the fact that these, quote, game wardens, a conservation officer, are crying at the altar, hurting in pain by the fact that they have to arrest their own family members. But they ain't giving back the money. So what do you do? Who do you turn around to and look and with honesty and say, I'm a part of this machine? And you got to come to grips with that. When a person is desecrating a Hawaiian iwi kupuna and you can't even get a response, a call, a geologist, or anyone to come to that site. You're being paid daily. Where are your tears then? Why aren't you crying out loudly to the public to say that you are not being allowed to work overtime at night or certain situations, but it's okay? While people are desecrating iwi kupuna or historical sites or archaeological sites, where are your tears? There aren't they your kupuna too? So it's a very delicate cakewalk anyway, being in law enforcement. We need them, but we need a good entity, a good agency, good management. So this whole thing just stirs up the muck, and it's about time that we have a situation here where recently, you're aware of this, some of you listened in the past, you've heard about the dairy farms on both Big Island and Kauai. Kauai, the Friends of Mahaulepu were instrumental in filing a lawsuit, raising the issue, and causing closure and cessation of any practice of building or structuring a dairy on Kauai. They also intervened with O'Okala on the Big Island and Hamakua Coast to see that that dairy was shut down. These are substantial impacts on the environment. But along the way, the state already knew. Along the way, the governor is talking this hoo-hoo about sustainable foods and local foods, and yet the crap that was allowed, the millions and millions of gallons of crap water being dumped down the streams and the gullies into the ocean and depleting the resources and impacting the native people there. So when I see TMT happen and I see a proclamation happening, thank goodness for that proclamation, because what it does, it gives a definitive answer to, does this man and others care about the native people? Hell no, they don't. It's a business. It's an opportunity. It's about managing. I'm now governor. I can't run. I was a senator. Now what I do? Oh, I'm an engineer. So I want to know if Mr. Ige will make a declaration, a formal declaration, telling us that he will not be involved with any remotely, directly, or any way, any engineering firm or construction firm that obtain a contract that works up there on TMT or anywhere on TMT. That would be a good thing. But I suspect, based on the heavy-handedness and the declaration and the proclamation and all that gyration that went on, we see going on, there's something wrong here. But again, for the native people, if ever there was one thing that should be said, is that I'll tell you about a song that Michael Jackson sang. And he, some of the lyrics says, they don't care about us. Many of them will flock off to, even Mr. Ige, he was proud to say that he was going to Okinawa and because of his heritage and what have you, which is fine. But let's see the same feelings expressed and let's see the same appreciation for others and their culture. Because you're mandated, actually, by law, to care for the native people and their interests. So, when you look at, we've done a number of stories on tasers, right? The state DLNR buys tasers, and they just sit up. They spend money to train the guys, to train the officers to use the tasers, but the tasers just sit up and the batteries go dead, and then they lie and says, well, no. Well, can we look at those tasers and can we take pictures of them for a news story? No, we can't. No, can't do that. Really? You got it. Okay. Well, let's do a story on fire hazards. No, can't do that. Can't do that. So this agency is a one-way agency. They tell you what they're going to do to you, but there's no talking. You go into the land board meetings, that whole group of people is conflicted. They got their own special interests. They have their own decisions made up. And then when all else fails now, if they were all total strangers and never met anybody, somehow these weak-kneed men and women that got involved with the land boards relegated or assigned or transferred the rights of Suzanne Case to be able to remove a matter, an item from the agenda before it even makes the agenda. So when we give credibility or credence to this effort at Mauna Kea, I'm very suspicious of anything that is stated, that is said, that is done. Because I know how the weevils get into the wheat and their special interests and the legislators. I'd like to know. The state senators should have immediately come unglued with such heavy-handedness that was being displayed, that is still being displayed, and the abuse and the use of DLNR monies. Now, the question is, who's going to pay for this money, Where is it coming from? If federal funds are from the Coast Guard, are they going to take from DLNR monies from the joint agreement memorandum and take that money and spend on, which will then have no money because the few handful of game wardens have taken all the loot, man, and hadn't looked at one monk seal, hadn't chased one person with the fishing net, hadn't interacted with anybody that dumps sewage or sludge or deleterious materials in the water. They're still sitting with broken phones and poor radio communications and unauthorization, or no authorization of overtime as it should be done. But what happens when it comes to suppressing a native people? Damn, you should see there was neck break, break speed. They get some of these off, and I still submit that until we become truthful to one another, and then when you have to incorporate, you're man enough, you're big enough to declare a proclamation declaring these are evil people, these brown people, they're going to get out there and they've been standing around and they got drugs and uses and they're doing illegal things. And then you know what? Oh, you really know what's going on? And many of them can't get along with one another. See, when you resort to that kind of tactics, Mr. Ige, it's no longer you're showing that you don't give a damn about the native people or human rights. You see, it often said that anytime you see, when the police would see more than two black men congregating or gathering together, wherever they are, they could be in the park or on the street corner, they were plotting something. They were going to do something illegal. That's the same thing or the sensation that I went left with when I heard and read the proclamation and then watch the Ige on TV say that. See, it's okay to shoot a black man because he has no respect for black, for law, because I told him to stop. He didn't stop. Yeah, well, why the hell was he running? Well, why are you contacting him? Well, he didn't change signals and over and then, so I was going to stop him. To do what? Does it result in the death of this man because he didn't change the signal? Because these things have presented themselves so often, and it's consistent with what Ige, and you might argue with it, but I've been at this wheel a long time, and I've been at the hands of racism a long 60 years, 66 years. And what is most offensive is that these things, the same strategies, the same verbiage, the same behavior exists in Mississippi as it does here in Hawaii. The only difference is I can put on a Aloha shirt here and be the biggest racist as I want to be. In Mississippi, you can't cloak it because you're expected to be a bigot. But here, and then you turn around and you suggest that, oh, we love Hawaii. We love the people. I'm the governor. I love the people here. But let the people do something that they express themselves in objecting and see what tolerance you have for them and what love you have for their culture. You'll find that you'll have a deficit. And you'll find that if someone made an assessment, if you allow me to assess your behavior, Mr. Ige, and senators and state representatives, I would say you would have a deficit of substantial deficit. Because you can't beat people down and then when they speak up and you defraud them. Now, I have heard also that they're just making this up about how this environmental stuff that they are claiming that it's going to have a negative environmental impact. The natives are just making that up. And I'm going to submit to you. The native people are right. And I know they're right because there are documents, the environmental impact statements and the cleanup, the closure plans for some of these, the French telescope, where they used to dump mercury and silver on the ground, just let it flow. And part of the decommissioning and demolition of it was part of it was to clean up those elements. But when you're dismissive and you treat the native people like they are making this crap up just to get some attention, then you are a racist because they at least respect the fact that they have a right, a natural right. In fact, because it is a territory or the 50th state of America, they enjoy and have embraced the Constitution. And some smart ass said, well, if they've embraced the Constitution, why do they want to be native? Can't be both. You know, but it's okay if I go around and tell you my family is from Scotland and I, you know, they didn't wear the kilt like we did, but they had hawkish. You know, my family is from Ireland and my family, it's okay for American whites and people or my family, my ancestry came over here to work in the plantation from Okinawa, from Japan. But you don't see no declaration or proclamation that the Okinawan Center or the Japanese Cultural Center or the Korean Cultural Center is doing things that offend people. But all these things are occurring on the backs and the shoulders of the native people called Hawaiian or Kanaka Maoli. So, and I'm not patronizing the native people. I just think that at some point, when you get this mixture and this hybridization of men that wear guns and badges and then goes and put handcuffs on the kapuna and cries and tell you, it hurts so much, and may your feet get welded to the ground. If you think we're going to buy that crap, because you're laughing all the way to the bank. And when you spend that money on that four-wheel drive Tundra that you're going to buy and that you're going to do that, think about your kupuna. Think about your culture. It's okay for you to have a moral compass that sometimes goes on in the midst of all this BS and say that I don't have to. Now, I'm told they're going to assign more officers, you see. And if they come from Kauai and come from Maui or come from Oahu, what are you going to get? Unless they modify the agreement, and I don't think there's going to be much of a modification, you're going to see what you're going to see is the bank book is going to get bigger. The cost is going to get bigger. And so my question is, again, who's going to pay for this? Who? Where is it going to come out of the budget? Was it in set up by the governor? Did the legislators fund it and acknowledge and anticipate this great objection that we see? So I know that many of you will probably go away thinking, well, you know, that guy is radical. And I've said to you, don't care, because there's nothing like watching the abuse of a people. Nothing like it. And it's what's more insulting is when someone come up and say, I think they're faking it. They're just making this up. But it's okay for others, non-native people, to express concerns about everything. And they get their way. So, leave you with one little bit on this hour, and we'll be back shortly. Did you know that, and I'm shocked that so will you take all of that, the money that is expended and spent on these officers going over there, and yet if we have officers that have left here, who's protecting the resources here? Who is responding to the Evie Kupuna desecration here? Who's responding to the Clean Water Act here? Who's responding to the take and the illegal hunting here, or the cutting of coral trees here, or wood, harvesting illegally plants and what have you? Who's doing that here when they've gone off to a, quote, war against the native people over there? So it's not a holistic agency. It's fragmented. It's led by people with special interests that they don't openly declare their special interests. And they tolerate some evil behavior. So for this hour, we'll be back. But I'll leave you with this. We learned that when all is said and done, and at the end of the day, everybody make their fair salary, the DLNR offers its officers a payment for code of conduct, somewhere between $1, $1.50, or maybe more. We don't know the specifics because, again, they don't talk about open matters. It's under investigation, and we're not available, and on and on and on. So, code of conduct, that means you get $1.50 possibly per hour for being good boys. But what that means is that by giving you that, they own you 24/7. And only they can violate the law. Only they can violate the hiring practice. Only they can order the proclamation. Only they can take money and spend it and not have to explain to the public, where is this money coming from? $2,000 per officer or more per day. And this is going to go till August 2nd or longer. So 10 officers from Oahu, I'm just throwing it out there, at $2,000 a day, and it'd be more because some are higher level people, step one, step two, step three, step in it. But anyway, I hopefully you don't equate the Native American crying. In the old days, they used to run a commercial on TV where the Native American was crying, and because of the way this country is trashing it, it's in the litter and what have you. Don't confuse the two. When you see a conservation officer crying, He's crying because his soul is nurtured by the money. He stands by and he could always pick up the phone and say anonymously, that's a lie. We haven't had anybody doing drugs, because if they would have been doing drugs, we would have arrested them. Not on my watch would I choose to arrest little old ladies, so to speak, of the kupuna, and let drug users and dealers frolic openly, overtly. Yeah, show me the money. Okay, we'll be back. This is Carol Cox on talk808.com. Go to the Carol Cox Show on the internet, and we'll pick up from here. We'll be back in the next hour. Aloha. Okay, hey, good morning again, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show here on talk808.com. Again, if you want to look at any of this information or follow up on all the stories, and please go to carolcox.com. That's carolcox.com. And you can see what we have posted up there. And if you have any information you want to share with us, always welcome to receive info. Also, if you'd like to call in, you can call us here at the show at 808-782-6627, 808-782-6627. We're live, and welcome aboard. So we were talking earlier about the TMT and the DLNR and the people that were involved with the emotional aspects of it and the ordering of the proclamation by the governor. And I will tell you, it reminds me, that proclamation, it reminds me of a story I once read where a guy set off 40, 50, 60 defoggers, insect repellent or insect foggers in his house, in his small house. And it all it was now, just getting a few insects, pests. And what happened? He blew his house up. So, in other words, the use of National Guards and was a bit too much. And you would think that you would have heard Mr. Ige say, well, I've also, because due to the drug use that we witness and the sale of drugs, I have ordered an undercover team to come in and work amongst them and arrest those people that are selling those bad drugs. But instead, he arrested the elder, the kupuna. And I guess, if there's one thing I've learned in life, Mr. Ige, don't mess with your elder. Respect your elder, because the elder and children and pets and small animals will get you nothing but trouble. People love them. People respect them. And because they're vulnerable and they're fragile. And so you should be shaping, not making them into evil people. So anyway, the tolerance that we witness on the part of the DLNR is mind-boggling. And that tolerance for illegal activity, that tolerance for unethical activity, that tolerance for the violation of workplace rules. Now, we talked about this maybe 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and last year also. Let me just share with you. Now, if you know the DLNR officers, some of them I've become familiar with, and I would say to you, they would be the first that I would call if I was in trouble. That's how great they are, how honest they are. But they work for a system that is so damn corrupt and relentless. If you speak out, they're hunting you down. If you don't speak out, they'll hunt you down and abuse you anyway. They will. So if you go out and tell people what they're doing illegally, they seek you out to destroy your career. If you don't say anything, they will assign you to projects that will burn you out anyway and use you up anyway and expose you to civil rights and all of those things and hardship. And as one person pointed out, that, yeah, if someone sues us, they'd be suing the government. No, because there's stress that comes with any lawsuit, whether whatever role you are in, and it's a distraction. So now the composition of people, if you see a game warden, be nice to them because they're not evil. They just work for evil people. They're very timid because they got to watch their shoulder, look over their shoulder. You get a guy that is hired in Suzanne Case who has special interest in funneling money out of the back door to the nonprofits and inviting nonprofits inside of government and abusing and using the authority. So you, as a honest DLNR employee doing your job, you're threatened because you see when the stress is built even greater because Suzanne Case knows she's doing something unethical and illegal, and she wants to send a message through her persons, either whether it's the former chief, Mr. Farrell or Robert Farrell, and or what have you. But let me just get to a couple points here that workplace violence. This is the tolerance for workplace violence, apparently, is there. It's okay to be violent in the workplace at DLNR, or its facilities. I say that because over there, I was told, now, I don't know, I haven't had any chance to see, and again, you're dealing with a secret police. All you know is that they want to be in control, they being management. And these are civilian people, and the civil service people are at their mercy. So, but you can also be the favorite child due to politics or family relationships or what have you, and then you get elevated and promoted in situations where you should be fired. So, there is a lawsuit that is brought against by Mr. Wyatt Cam, and that lawsuit is in the United States District Court of Hawaii, District of Hawaii. And it's against Carlton Helm, Robert Farrell, and initially filed against also a defendant was the State of Hawaii, Department of Land and Natural Resources. And Doe defendants, 1 to 10. So the courts have ruled recently that the state has been dismissed from the lawsuit. But over there, I'm told, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm told that we did some checking around, that there's an officer named Carlton Hill. We've talked about Mr. Helm before regarding this very incident that led up to the lawsuit by Wyatt Cam. And, you know, you've heard of the proverbial powder keg. Why, if in fact Mr. Helm is there on the island of the Big Island working with the TMT enforcement squad, you'd have to ask yourself why. Or better yet, ask yourself, he still has a job? So I'm going to read from this lawsuit that is I haven't been informed that it's no longer in existence, and I checked the files. But what we have here is This stems from an incident involving Robert Farrell, the former chief and of DLNR, who's since left, but still, we're told, still have some phone contact with Mr. Redullo, because Mr. Redullo, you see, the state has a requirement that in order to qualify for the administrator, chief of the law enforcement, you have to pass certain physical tests. And we're told that he didn't, but maybe that's why Mr. Ige was inclined to call in the National Guards, because the chief of the DLNR may not be up to it physically to handle any stress or physical stress. I don't know. Jason's a nice guy, but rules are rules. But back to Carlton Helm. Carlton Helm, if he, it is true that he's over there working the Big Island, then the question would be raised is why and who sent him there, and why did they send him there when, in fact, they know that he is being sued for, one, excessive force and violence, violation of the Fourth Amendment against Defendant Helm and Defendant Farrell individually. Count three, unreasonable search and seizure in violation of the Fourth Amendment against Defendant Helm, Defendant Farrell individually. Count four, assault. Count five, battery. Count six, false arrest, false imprisonment. Count seven, invasion of privacy. Count eight, intentional infliction of emotional distress. Count nine, negligence. So that's an active case that you would think there are men and women that work for the agency are subjected to this thing called ROPA. And you can get ROPA'd for believing in God, apparently, at DLNR, but we won't go there. But what you can, we do know that Mr. Helm is, if he is over there actively working, or even here in Honolulu, why is he not on administrative ROPA that's relieved of police authority, where you are called in and you deliver your gun and your badge, or gun, I don't know which one you get, but the gun is a greater. And then you wait until it's resolved or what have you. That's Mr. Helm involved, and Mr. Farrell left. And what this involved is a 4th of July flotilla incident where the allegations are they illegally seized and commandeered a vessel. And this vessel was taken in. And the plaintiff is alleging that Mr. Helm put his foot on him at various places, in his back or in the small of his back, on his head. I wasn't there, so I don't know, but these are the lawsuit. We'll talk about that. He was told that he was under arrest without explanation, and for 45 minutes he remained face down as he was senselessly terrorized and humiliated, urinating on himself and sustaining burns and scrapes on his body. The enforcement chief, Docare, and officers who were present participated in and passively stood by as an assault and egregious violations of plaintiff's constitutional rights carried on for nearly an hour without any probable, reasonable, or just cause. Now, that's Mr. Helm as a subject of this lawsuit. Why would anyone put this person? I'm familiar with others who are on ROPA or have been on ROPA for less charges. But going back a bit, we talked about this too. And by the way, we posted up a recording where it relates to allegations that Mr. Carlton Helm, in another incident, committed workplace violence. And in that situation, he was in fact placed on ROPA for that alleged violation. It was investigated, and as a result, his immediate supervisor, or not immediate supervisor, but the branch chief, placed him on ROPA. And in that instance, you hear me say how criminal-minded and how cruel and evil the DLNR is in the upper management. The branch chief put him on ROPA, found substantial grounds, substantiated the claims, and then placed him on ROPA, but Robert Farrell returned and from travels and lifted the ROPA, or caused the lifting of the ROPA, dismissing of the ROPA, and then supposedly was going to conduct an investigation. But we've since learned that though they are alleging they were going to do, or the allegations they were suggesting they're going to investigate it, we learn indirectly that some sources say that there is no investigation. But the facts are, and they can't be changed, that one, this stems from an incident at Cocoa Head Gun Range. And the issues were Mr. Helms, or Officer Helms, in his official capacity at the gun range, became belligerent in using vulgar terms and vulgarity, and was excited about something. And that something, we're told, was about why would people throw him under the bus, and those are my words, on this matter involving Wyatt Camp. So it's no question if he did or was placed. And so this tape, this audio tape, was recorded by, nothing to do with us. We just were able to get our hands on a copy, where you will hear Mr. Robert Farrell, then the current chief of DOCARE, Department of Conservation and Resource Enforcement. He was the administrator. In that, you determine yourself if you bother to listen to it. It's long. And I think you will go away with at least a sensation that these men that had filed the complaint in this instance was being discouraged. Even though the branch chief had already investigated it and gave notice and placed Mr. Helm on ROPA, relieved of police authority. So we have that. Suzanne Case basically blew it off. So secondly, Mr. Helm, some couple of years back, was investigated and disciplined for another workplace violence. So what happens here? Would you, and I know many of you have been managers and supervisors and what have you, but would you put this man, Mr. Helm, back into that? And why does he still have a job? Three times. And these guys carry guns, man. How would you like to be part of a workplace that guy hits the walls, hits the printers and machinery in the workplace and get all bust up? And then in turn keeps his job, and then because it's a stellar. If he is, if they did submit him back over there to the Big Island, we have cause to believe that he was and is, based on the information we have there at Big Island. Why would you put, again, as we've asked, Mr. Carlton Helm in that situation, knowing that any moment something could go wrong because these demons that seem to go to work with him, there's no assurance that they decided to take a vacation. Are they home alone? Or are they with him? So, again, the big question is, hey, how is it that this person can do this and get away with it, and we have the state has a zero tolerance policy on workplace violence. Zero tolerance. And I think what that means is that anybody that is not liked by the management or appointed by the management has zero recognition. So it's okay for the people that is appointed and loved and befriended by the management. It's okay. They can behave in any fashion they want to, and they'll be protected, while others are subject to scrutiny, being chastised, being punished. So now, mind you, we know that there's another case where another officer is receiving a lawsuit, is being complained about being sued, and they have this officer on ROPA. But Mr. Helm has a lawsuit in federal court, but he's not being ROPA'd. And plus, he has two other incidents of workplace violence. So, how does one explain the disparity that we're seeing exhibited here on the part of Suzanne Case? And short fuse, I'm reluctant to use such terms because they're just too general. But for the sake of this conversation, it's a short fuse, possibly. Something's wrong. And why are they tolerating? Is it that this person has someone politically connected? Is there trade-offs? Some have even suggested that there was actual trade-off. You take care of my son, I take care of your son. You take care of this, you take care of that. These kinds of relationships do exist in many workplaces. We can't say that, I don't know that to be facts, but I'm just sharing with you what, in trying to ferret out some explanation. Now, you might ask, well, why don't you talk to the management? Well, they don't talk about things that's under investigation. So, when I hear that, I want to scream and say, well, gee, since I've known you, you don't want to talk about it because it's under investigation. That means that you're tolerant of criminal behavior, unethical behavior, violence in the workplace. Because if you continue to say that you can't talk about it, then what are you doing? Why are these things repeating themselves? So that was, again, lawsuits are, just because someone files a lawsuit against you doesn't mean you're guilty of anything. And I owe that disclaimer to that admonishment to Mr. Carlton Helm and everybody else in this matter, that I'm not concluding that you're guilty of anything. But I am saying that in asking the questions that you have a lawsuit against you. And the person, a public person. I'll read you some of the introduction. This is an action brought by plaintiff Wyatt J.K. Cam to vindicate the outrageous assault and the violation of his constitutionally protected rights by officers of the Hawaii Division of Conservation and Resources Enforcement on July 4th, 2017. That afternoon, plaintiff was a captain aboard a vessel named, quote, Wind Warrior, end quote, anchored on the water outside of Waikiki Beach when it was approached and boarded by DoCare officers who verbally assailed plaintiff with vulgar and threatening obscenities and forced him to lie face down on the deck of the boat. One officer stood atop plaintiff, pressing his boot into the back of his head and repeatedly told him, quote, I will kick you in the mouth, end quote, if you lift your head up. Plaintiff was told he was under arrest. Without explanation, and for 45 minutes, he remained on the face down as he was senselessly terrorized and humiliated, urinating on himself, and I read through that part. Plaintiff's constitutional rights carried on for nearly an hour without any probable or reasonable cause. So, forget where Mr. Helm is. Why is he still employed? And when you have protesters, what clearance have Mr. Helm been submitted to process to say that it's okay, he can contain himself, he can control himself? Now, this suggests to me that these things can be ignored and circumvented, and you can use enlist the help of these kinds of people if you're goal-oriented, and it's your goal to get that damn telescope up there, you see. So your tolerance for anything, talking about zero tolerance, your tolerance is 100% tolerance. You'll tolerate anything to carry out the wishes of your big money friends or special interests or the UH and what have you. UH said, someone said that they were not going to pay for the law enforcement efforts on that. And I beg to differ. I think they should pay because if you were a farmer and you were raising bananas and you had this super crop of bananas or macadamia nuts and you were renting from the state agriculture department the land itself, and someone comes in and rip you off, does the agriculture department dig deep in its pockets and go out and investigate and capture the people who stole your crop? I mean, you're leasing from the state. So this whole Mauna Kea approach by the state is wrong. So many missteps, so many misplacements of the treatment and the handling of this that it boggles the mind. So I guess getting back to who is the ones that are being impacted? The native people. And who else? Well, I'm not a native person, but I'm offended by seeing that my government behaves in such a fashion, which signals to me that my rights too will be trampled on, and there's no guarantee of anything because you're dealing with big business, special interests, and crooked government. Makes for one hell of a drink, you know. Intoxicating, inebriating, I mean, to the point where you don't want to move. You don't want to take any action, get involved in anything, because you might be met with the National Guard. I mean, imagine. We talk about Martin Luther King, and we see the way things were handled there, way Bull did in Montgomery and Selma and where they were being beaten and where wherever the blacks were protesting or what have you, the National Guard, Kent State, there's no difference. Whatever it would take to get the job done, as suggested by Mr. Ige. And then, whereas the rights of the public, this is his proclamation, whereas the rights of the public must be protected regardless of viewpoint, and an overwhelming number of protesters have been taken steps to frustrate legitimate law enforcement functions to enforce the rule of law and provide for public safety, namely by blocking access. So why did they arrest the Kupuna when, in fact, here's an unlawful acts right here? Why didn't they arrest those guys? As TV showed that in some of the stories that they arrested them and then took them down away and said, well, you know, if we won't take you to jail if you promise to just sign the ticket and go pay it later. So, what does this mean, folks? Let's say, if it keeps on, 2,000 people go up there, or 1,000 people, and they decide to arrest, to remove them all. Two officers to each arrestee for officer safety and the safety of the arrestee. But what about the women? Is it required that a woman be transported by a woman? How many trucks will be needed to transport legally and consistent with the state law in transporting other policies? How many? Can you imagine reading a proclamation that says, whereas the rights of the public must be protected regardless of viewpoint? You have a right to protest. You have a right to speak. If they step out of line, then, but just arrest them. They don't say that they're going to be uncooperative, and they didn't suggest that they're going to be violent. Law enforcement has repeatedly issued verbal warnings to the protesters. So let's look at this. Who owns the roads going up to Mauna Kea? Who owns Saddle Road? What you have here is some jurisdiction issues. And is this a criminal matter or is this a civil matter? Well, ask DOCARE what do they cite when they cite people up there. Is it civil? Is it criminal? How does one handle civil matter, civil arrest? So I think that if you ask me, I think based on all that I see here and all that has been presented, there's a special interest group wanting this telescope, and they are going to get it via the machine that David Ige steers and head, called the state government. When they tore down the altars or at the sacred sites or the praying sites, that was about, it spoke volume to the real true heart of David Ige. No apologies, no offerings, no nothing. Come back down the hill and describe these people as mad men and women, uncontrollable. We have to go and put up a proclamation. Whereas recognized and identified leaders of the protesters have repeatedly maintained and stated they are prepared to do everything they can to prevent the construction of the 30-meter telescope in Mauna Kea, and that they will continue their obstructionist efforts over a protracted period of time. Is that a crime? I mean, if you're speaking out, you're not being heard, you're not being listened to, you've been ignored, and we're going to put it in anyway. So I just don't understand. And there was a problem where he said the environment, they were impacting the environment. Now that took me by surprise. Being concerned with the environment, if that was the case, you would think, approach it a different way. You wouldn't leave the island of Oahu naked of officers. While you normally have 25 on this island or whatever, and you send 50% of them over to the other island for weeks on end, and then you proclaim that, cry out that you're worried about the environment. You want to call and talk, Carol, at 808-782-6627. Good. So give us a call. Anyway, we're going to post this up, like I say, and it's just, it's difficult to swallow day in, day out. Now, Mr. Ige is an interesting man. I used to see him and I thought, oh, he's really Akamai to the Hawaiian issues and what have you. But this display of behavior that we witness now, you got to wonder, what is he composed of? What is it? He's not flamboyant. He was, people say he couldn't win. I thought he would win as governor. That's why I invited him on the show and had him on the show, thinking that you would hear his practices and his philosophy on governing people and other things. But it's very disappointing now. If you write his office, you're met with a screener that proclaims, well, we don't use that address anymore. I wrote a letter regarding Dan Dennison and the racist stance and his racist history of portraying and promoting videos of Obama, President Obama, as a monkey and that kind of stuff, and the abuse of his travel and the expenditures of the excessive amounts being spent. And to date, Governor Ige will not respond. At Radford High School, we responded. So what we have is substantial issues, but we're not worthy of a call. So it's not surprising that his heavy-handedness and I get the hell out of my way and off my land because I'm the governor is obvious here. And he has surrounded himself with people from PRP and former media people. And that seems to be the practice now. If you're going to defraud the public, that's the composition of staff you want. People that have worked with the media, so they know how to suppress you and they know how to dance around. They still have friends within media. And they know how to propagate lies and mistruth and excitement to get the excitement of the people to go ahead and say, well, it's okay to have a proclamation. It's okay to arrest Olu Kupuna on the mountain for objecting. But I think this one has been one of those situations where they bit off more than they can chew and it's backfiring. I could be wrong. But there is a situation that the allowance for this to happen is just mind-boggling. I told you in the early hour, Mahalapu and friends of Mahalapu filed lawsuits. And they also did water tests with Surf Rider and Blue Water. And they found fecal matter, fecal coliform enterica cocci, in high numbers and what have you. The state engaged and got a what it called a phylo chip. And Berkeley Labs and a number of people were involved. For 2 years, I have requested a copy of the findings and the phylochip data under the UIPA, and I'm entitled to that, to make that request. And it took me more than 2 years to finally get a copy, but to get a copy, I had to file a FOIA. I had to write Keith Kawaoka and beg of him to do the right thing to release that. And here's what I was told by staff members that were participating in the write-up or the draw-up or the working with this phylochip matter. I was told that, well, we're not going to release it to you. Now, I had filed 2 years ago for the documents, and they should have been released then. But they didn't respond, didn't say, no, we're not going to give them to you. We're withholding them because of this allowance or the law allows us to. Nothing. So finally, I asked them again for them, and I was told, well, we can't give them to you this time because the director, Bruce Anderson, does not know if he wants to do a press release or do a press conference. But you will have to wait to get your copies after that. Now, nowhere in the law or the Uniform Information Practices Act that I've witnessed or found that says or suggests that a state agency or any agency can withhold information that is considered releasable to the public. They can withhold it because they're going to, they're determining or whether, deciding whether they're going to do a press conference or do a press release. That's the biggest insult I've received in a long time, and it was at the hands of the David Ige administration. And that's telling. It's consistent with what I've said about Mr. Ige and his handling of this matter and that proclamation. They just don't give a damn because he's the governor and they work for him, and Carol Cox is a nothing and a nobody. And he's just a citizen, just asking. He's a pain in the ass. He's just ignore him. He'll go away. So we finally got those documents while Bruce Anderson was hurriedly trying to do a press release. And in the press release that he did before I got mine, and mind you now, I'm the only guy that was asking for this information for 2 years. Formally, but I was blown off and brushed off. But what happens is I get the documents finally, and I, in the request also was for the emails, the back and forth emails. And some of the emails suggested they were making representations or misrepresentations on the status and the finding of this phylochip in the data. So the Friends of Mahalapu and Surf Rider is pursuing this now, and hopefully it, the Garden Island did a article on it, and I think the Star Advertiser is writing one. I don't know. I don't speak for them. But again, this is speaking to the ethics or lack thereof, of the David Ige. And so it's no surprise that a stumble or fumble such as this offensive proclamation would take place. So, what do? You have an agency that says, we're not going to give you any information because we're deciding if we do a press release or a press conference, so you're just going to have to wait. Or a governor's office that you write letters and say, hey, this guy is offensive and he's racist and he's a bigot and what have you, and you don't get any response. Then you find that they are also falsely arresting and charging truck drivers from hauling materials from Radford where they didn't know. And you write the governor as a citizen of concern, and they blow you off and don't respond. So I have to, at some point, draw the conclusion that come to the realization that there's something in their mind, in their psyche, that how they view me, that either I'm just a pain in the ass, or he's a black person having no power, no influence, no nothing, so we can screw him and ignore him. Something's wrong. But whatever it is, it's inconsistent with what is allowed by the Uniform Information Practices Act. If you write your government and make a request for information that is deemed public, you have a right to that information. There are certain conditions and allowances for redacting and withholding due to maybe it might frustrate the process or something, but at least you're entitled to a respectable response and an answer. I don't think my aptitude for and my display of concerns for the environment can be questioned and say that, well, he doesn't deserve it because he's not a viable environmentalist. He's not a viable activist. He's not a viable. They can't say that. So why do I say maybe it's because of my race? Well, I see how they treat the native people here. And if you don't shut up and get out of the way and stop selling them drugs and blocking traffic, we're going to call out the National Guard on your ass because we can do it. See, when people behave and profit and benefit from racist behavior or something similar to racist behavior, what difference does it make? It's an encroachment on our rights and an infringement on our rights and a disrespect to us as human. So what difference does it make if he's a bigot or just a guy who's tied up in his politics or whatever? The effects are the same. This is a democracy. We're entitled to certain freedoms. And that's the way it is. So I've enjoyed talking with you today, and we're going to really start building this up now. We got some ideas, and if you're interested and want to be part of this, give me a call at carol@carolcox.com. First of all, the email, carol@carolcox.com, or call at 782-6627. 808 is the area code. So I've enjoyed it. Thank you, and we'll see you next week. Aloha.